You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. This business talk show airs live on Tuesday and Wednesdays at 4 p.m. If you're listening to this show as a podcast, well, then we'd say welcome and thank you. And also, we'd encourage you to consider listening to this show during our broadcast times, heard exclusively here on octalkradio.net. The goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, to make better business decisions. If you want to join in the conversation during the show today because you are listening live, then find the community chat room section of octalkradio.net's website. Log in, post your thoughts and questions, ideas. Our crack producer, Paul, will bring them to my attention, and possibly we'll work them into one of our two interviews that we have scheduled for today on the radio program. Speaking of two guests that we have today on the radio program, I'm delighted to welcome my first guest. My first guest is Scott Nelson. He's with Security and Risk Management Group. We've got a bunch of things that we want to talk to Scott about. One of them in particular, as we said in our newsletter that went out earlier this week, is about the security risk that CEOs of mid-market companies are facing. But first, let's welcome Scott Nelson to the radio program. Scott, welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Hi, Rick. Scott Nelson here. Great. Thank you very much. We'll enjoy talking with you and your listeners.
Great. Why don't we get started by asking you a very simple question, Scott, and that is, tell our audience a bit about your professional background and your path to your current firm.
I started out some years ago in the FBI. Prior to that, I was in the Marine Corps, kind of a natural progression from one agency to the other. In the FBI, I spent 25 years in about six different field offices, rising up to the position of Deputy Assistant Director. Once I left the Bureau, as we like to call it, I went to Warner Brothers and was the Vice President of Security there, headquartered in Burbank, California, and we had operations around the globe. And from there, I went and headed up security for Time Warner in New York City. I was sent there to manage the security issues, put together a new department with the once great merger of AOL and Time Warner.
You have extensive military and FBI experience, and then also private industry, mostly with media companies, it sounds like. I mean, was that a plan of yours after you left the FBI to target the military or the media for a position, or was that happenstance?
Rick, it really was happenstance. I turned 50, and that's kind of the golden age of departure in the federal service, and I understood, learned from an associate out on the West Coast that Warner Brothers was looking for a new security chief. So I put in for it, and it turned out to be absolutely a terrific assignment. They have more things going worldwide than you can absolutely imagine, from theme parks to studios all around the world. So that was really terrific, and the family and I moved out to California and established ourselves in the Los Angeles area.
Where did you move from?
We moved from Northern Virginia. I spent my last assignment in the FBI Academy as a Deputy Assistant Director. I ran all the international police training there. Great assignment, but we moved from Northern Virginia out here to the West Coast.
Interesting, and that's an interesting age at 50. You know, I consider that to be quite young yet in the professional world. And is that still the current view from the FBI, that 50 is kind of a magic number for them?
Well, Rick, it's interesting because the FBI goes under the premise that they want younger yet experienced agents. Age 57 is mandatory retirement from the FBI, but I've found in the private sector, once you start to approach age 60, it gets a little more difficult. So myself and most FBI agents decide at age 50 to leave the Bureau and strike out into another career path.
Oh, I see. Okay, that makes sense. So let's thank you for sharing that, Scott, by the way. Let's focus you now on the firm. Not the bureau, but the firm. Tell us about what it is your firm does and what makes your firm different. Why do clients do business with you as opposed to others who might offer something similar?
Rick, we're what I like to call a virtual firm. We don't have heavy overhead. I don't have a lot of onboard staff. Instead, all of the services that we provide, and I'll give you a kind of a thumbnail sketch of that momentarily, but all the services we provide, we use former FBI agents, CIA agents, Department of Defense, senior law enforcement persons around the country. That differentiates us in one way because it allows us to offer probably a little more cost competitiveness than otherwise. But the fact is, I think we're different because we provide what is often considered a broad brush stroke approach, but in fact, it's very specific. We do what you call threat risk analysis on small and medium-sized businesses and also special individuals. We do physical security and life safety, investigations, executive protection. We tailor each of our various programs to the specific company involved, and we try to provide a real cost-effective experience for them that is less time-consuming and less boilerplate than most big, big companies with big, big overheads and big bills to pay.
Of the various services that you provide, is any one or combination of them kind of taken on more importance or become more popular with your client base over the past couple years?
I think so. The one that I like to discuss with clients, because big companies and medium-sized companies and smaller companies all do this. They do it in a variety of ways. They do it on the financial front. They do it sometimes on the security front. They do it on the personnel side when they hire. They do it throughout their business environment, and it's called threat risk analysis. We do that in sort of a special way because we provide a threat risk analysis that looks at both their physical environment, and that would be for the executive or the employees, locks, alarms, cameras, background checks, and we mesh into that a virtual analysis, which goes to the web. And we take a look at their exposure on the web. Social media and other things have really taken off. If you want to be all over the web, if you need to be all over the web, that's great. There's good ways to do that, and there's bad ways that create vulnerability and risk. So I think one of the interesting things we do is this threat risk analysis for businesses and key individuals that brings in both the physical and the virtual side. The virtual site, incidentally, we call web scrub.
I can see how that would be a more holistic approach at looking at the security risks of small and mid-market companies. So I can see why that would be gaining in its popularity, especially, you know, as times change in the economy and people are much more online than they've ever been before. We're going to come back, and Scott, and I'm going to ask you for kind of the key areas of risk that the listeners to our radio program should be aware of, because they're predominantly mid-market CEOs and
sure,
entrepreneurs. But before we get there, let's ask you the guiding principle question as we think of it here on the radio program, and that is, of all the lessons that you've learned and experiences that you had in your career, you know, have you evolved to or built a guiding principle that you're using to build your current firm?
I think so, and there's probably several things, but the main thing is in our business, we want to pick our target. We want to be careful about who we use because there's always confidentiality issues, so we try to pick very, very good people to get the job done, and then we try to come in on time in a sort of an economic manner. So I basically do work with my company by reference only. We occasionally take so-called incoming cold calls, but we're pretty secure in the view that we've got a lot of FBI guys out there, a lot of agency guys, a lot of military folks, And we get just about as much business as we can handle through reference. So my guiding principle is, I guess, in addition to doing well by each client, is to screen clients so that their needs match our capabilities. And that's really, really important, that we don't take on something that doesn't make sense for the client and ultimately make sense for us.
I have to tell you, Scott, I would imagine that there's a few listeners in our radio audience today that are saying, wow, you can get all the, this is about all the business he can handle from references. Holy cow, that's a nice business to have.
I'm very lucky in that regard, and all of the experiences through the Marine Corps, the FBI, and these major media companies has kind of, as we like to call it, set us up for success, and we're grateful for that, and we're pretty lucky. It's a nice position to be in.
And that's why we like to have guests on the radio program to bring their experiences to teach and give back lessons to our audience. And referrals are a very powerful way to build the business. And research shows they usually come along with the highest close rate of the different types of prospecting and business development that a company can do. Those leads that come by virtue of referrals tend to be the most likely to close across many different types of industries.
I'm certain that's the case, and that's another reason that we really focus on those areas. Not only do we close and get the work done, but we actually get paid. And in today's environment, I must say that there's plenty of situations out there where getting paid for work performed becomes a pretty critical issue.
We hear it frequently in the peer group meetings and the executive coaching that we do here with our clients. I would have to think, though, that if a customer has a choice to pay maybe this supplier or some former FBI and military people that he's done business with or she's done business with, they may want to pay you guys just because of your extensive training and background. I don't know.
I hope so. I think that's a good point.
Okay. Well, why don't we take our first sponsorship break for the radio program today? And then when we come back, we're going to ask Scott Nelson to talk with us about, since we just talked about how his business is based on referrals and all's going well, we are going to ask him about a current challenge that's facing the firm and the ideas and actions that he's begun to take to mitigate that challenge. But first, here's a word from a sponsor.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. By 3 with triple points on airfare, by 2 with double points on gas and groceries, and a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over 1 million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit AXPGold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at AXPGold.com.
If you are an Orange County business executive, this message is for you. Do you ever feel isolated with no place to turn for advice or feedback? Who holds you accountable to your commitments in your company? Where do you find the right resources to help you and your company grow? If you have these questions, then Critical Mass for Business might be the answer for you. Critical Mass for Business is committed to helping you make better decisions. These are groups of peers running businesses just like you, providing a great sounding board to test ideas and concepts, review plan and goals, and present issues and opportunities for discussion. The result is improved strategy, accountability, people, and execution skills. If you are interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. and learn more about our executive peer group.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show. Scott Nelson from Security and Risk Management Group is our guest today. And as I said before the break, we're going to ask you to share with us a challenge facing the firm. Scott, would you be so kind?
Sure, Rick. One of the challenges that we faced early on in this security business is the fact that there are so many people involved in so many aspects of security, and ultimately, it can be a life and death situation. Ultimately, bad security can result in the collapse of a company, the loss of reputation, the the loss of money, the loss of life. That said, tough economic times like we face now sometimes suggest to the CEO that security should be the first thing gone. That's a bit of a challenge. But more than that, the challenge that really faced us is to provide focused service for different businesses based on their size. If they're a mid-market company or a very large company, we have clients with 100,000 employees. But the challenge is to get away from this boilerplate, one-size-fits-all service in the security business where you have to have a guard, you have to have a gun, you have to have cameras. There are many ways to mix this thing up, and our challenge is to provide focus and uniqueness for each business so that the service charges for security won't undermine their profit. And that's what we try to do, and that is a challenge.
I could see how having multiple service offerings and variety of packaging that you could put together for your client, that's great because it can satisfy a lot of different needs, but it also can be a challenge in, one, orchestrating them correctly for each customer, and then two, like you said, bundling them such that they don't overwhelm the client with a from a cost perspective.
It is challenging, and security being one of the early throwaways for many companies makes it even more so, because if there's a power outage or a workplace violence event or a denial of service attack on the web, those things can be disabling, and trying to put up prevention systems for those but not break the bank is really interesting. And typically we can do it. Sometimes we miss the mark. But as a rule, we usually get our foot in the door and provide value added to some degree anyway.
I'm sure you do. And Scott, you know, part of what we had talked about in the newsletter that we'd sent out earlier this week is that we were going to ask you to share with our audience, you know, from your perspective, some of the key security and threat risks that are faced by mid-market companies. I also have been told by our producer that someone has tweeted in a question. What's the biggest? So before we do that, and maybe they actually go together, not sure, but the question is, what's the biggest threat today? Terrorism, kidnapping, or other type of threats that face mid-market enterprises and companies in this country?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I would say the two that you mentioned, terrorism, not because it will actually hit most mid-market companies, but there's a kind of a collateral effect that occurs when airports shut down and cities shut down. The threats for kidnapping are fairly specific if you're going to Mexico or Bogota, Colombia, but not so specific if you're traveling to Des Moines. One thing that wasn't mentioned is the threat on not man-made disasters, such as natural disasters. We had a big earthquake today. I haven't seen the damage reports from Washington, D.C. up the coast, but floods, fires, particularly fires in Orange County, would be terribly difficult. Those sort of natural disasters have to be considered, as well as these common issues of terrorism and kidnapping. Workplace violence is a big threat. Another threat is online presence of predators for kids and identity theft. So there's some of the threats, but frankly, each threat is based on the condition of the company, the location of the company, the vulnerability of that particular business model, that product line. They're doing business with China, they'll have different issues than if they're, you know, working with the California manufacturers or suppliers, or if they're a service group. So the things you mentioned are big threats, but I wouldn't want to suggest that we overwhelm everybody with this long list of threats. It has to be fairly tailored and fairly specific.
Scott, in your experience working with mid-market CEOs, if you had to draw a pie chart and say, okay, I'm gonna knock off how much of the threats are external to your business, and how much threats that you need to focus on as a CEO come from inside your business, employees, clients, competitors. If you had to draw a percentage of the pie chart for each of those, can you give us a sense for what would be the bigger slice of the pie, internal or external threats to a client, to a mid-market CEO?
Sure, and the answer won't please everybody because we like to hire good people who are good employees, but the internal threat, most security folks would say, is about 70% versus the external, which is 30%. We like to think we can build walls against those external intruders. The fact is, our internal folks know more, have more access, and may be more loyal, of course, so that's one thing. But the internal threat is probably more severe in most mid-sized companies than the external threat.
It seems like that makes sense. I can understand that. I don't have any disagreement with that. I think that's very logical. But it also seems to me that those are more controllable to some degree from a CEO's perspective than there's little that that anyone listening to this radio show is going to do about major espionage or natural disasters or man-made calamities, whether they be terrorism or whatever that is. There's a whole lot that they should be doing, though, to protect their assets in their firm from, unfortunately, I hate to say it this way, but from their employees and from their previous employees and from their competitors and just the general marketplace that they do business with, isn't it, Scott? That's much more in their control.
Absolutely. You're not going to do much about a second 9/11 or other major terrorism events. You may do something about the major natural disaster events like earthquake and fire and flooding. But internally, you can look at those issues. Workplace violence is one of those issues. You can take a look at due diligence programs and hire good employees and use proper screening methods and periodic indicators to ensure you have the best people, the most loyal people. And you can protect your intellectual property. If you're a manufacturing high-tech firm, if you're Coca-Cola, you have the secret for your syrup. So there are many internal things that can be done to protect yourself. There are some external things as well, the physical barriers, the gates, the locks, the cameras, the guards. Those help to a degree online, the barriers for providing for viruses and denial of service attacks. A lot of things can be done in both areas, but I would agree with you, Rick. Internally, you have a better chance at putting together a program that's helpful and prevents more so than externally.
But your point's well taken that as far as natural disasters, well, there's nothing you can do to prevent them. There's a lot that you can do to be prepared as a company to respond so that you don't lose service to your clients. I ran a manufacturing company for a number of years, and there was a severe set of fires that happened in San Diego during the time that I was president of that business. And that affected our supply chain because we had a plant in Tijuana, and San Diego was an important crossing for us. And that really brought us together to say, you know what, we need a plan, a contingency plan for when something like this might happen again, because we're a manufacturing company. You know what, we still have to supply our products regardless at all costs, you know, whatever, these natural disasters that happen.
Absolutely. It's an interesting area. I mentioned threat risk analysis, and that's sort of the beginning of a contingency plan. My view is we promote contingency plans for businesses, for families, because families and businesses go hand in glove. Senior executives have certain vulnerabilities. And during the course of travel, so we try to bring it all together, business, home, travel. And that contingency plan should be on one page. It should be well known, and occasionally you might think about tabletopping it so that everybody gets a chance to take a look at it, and when the fire alarm rings, they don't sit at their desk and say, it's just another false alarm. They need to react and be available in the planning, and these sorts of simple contingency plans are very helpful.
Yeah, and we sat and we said, okay, how many people can do their job from their home? Let's say they can't get back to work for whatever reason. The earthquake knocked the building down or the freeways are closed because of a fire. I mean, how do we ensure that we have some level of service? Who's the tiger team? What's the number that you call? There's just these questions that until you It's really helpful to think it through and then communicate it and repeat it and make it available to people to remind them in a time of a disaster so that the business doesn't have to completely go dark because you had some type of unforeseen natural disaster and you're not prepared to respond to it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if you take a look at the vulnerability of the group, the probability that something might happen, the so-called countermeasures you would apply throughout all these areas, and you communicate it and practice it. Doesn't take a lot of practice, incidentally, a couple hours a quarter, maybe a half day with a lunch and brunch sort of thing. You get your employees together, maybe a nice newsletter that goes out. It's time again, or maybe even internet programs, which a lot of banks use for their compliance requirements, might be helpful just to keep it sort of up front without crying wolf, but keep it up front so folks participate and are knowledgeable about these plans. It can help.
If someone would like to learn more about the services that you provide and the Business Scott Security and Risk Management Group, how do they find you on the web?
They can simply Google SRMG, or they can go to the website www.srmg-link.com, and we'd be glad to answer any questions and talk to anyone that has an interest in our services.
Interesting conversation. Glad that I had you on the show, and I appreciate you sharing just a slice of what you know in this area. I do appreciate you being a friend of the radio program, and welcome to the Critical Mass for Business community.
Thank you very much, Rick. It was my pleasure to join you today.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back for the second segment of Critical Mass, the radio show, and we have a returning guest. Yes, folks, Karen Ellard of SBR Sports is coming back. You might remember her interview from earlier this summer. Her company is focused on the active people out there in the listening audience, whether you be a triathlete, a cyclist, a swimmer, weekend warrior, whatever you might do, you probably have been exposed to her products. Maybe many of you probably are using them. So we're going to come back and talk about a couple topics that I didn't get a chance to get to with Karen the last time she was on the program, and I was dying to have her back, and we got her in before she leaves for a big convention meeting back east. But first, before we talk to Karen, we're going to hear a word from a sponsor.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. And as I said, Karen Ellard of SBR Sports Incorporated is my guest. Karen, welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Hi, Rick. It's good to hear your voice again.
Let's start the interview very simply by saying, for those who may not have heard your first interview on the program, I think it's fair to have you talk about the various products and, you know, what it is your company does.
Sure. Well, our company is called SBR Sports, and SBR stands for Swim, Bike, Run, and we started off with a chlorine outline for swimmers and triathletes, because as you know, when you swim, you are basically marinating in chlorine, and it is very difficult to get off the skin and out of the hair. That's what causes the copper in the chlorine is what causes hair to turn green for our little kids, and you know, you just get like hay-like hair. And so you have to have something that's chemically formulated that will remove the chlorine. It will attack it and wash it down the drain. And so our first product that we came out with was called TriSwim. And we came out with the shampoo, and then we came out with, at the same time, the body wash and the lotion. And within 6 months, we had people requesting the conditioner. So we have those four products under that brand. Then we also have TriSlide, which is our, we call it magic in a can. It is the most amazing skin lubricant out there. And as you know, I know you've dabbled in athletics as well, just a minor little seam on in your shirt or in your shorts or your skin rubbing when you're, you know, trying to exercise, run, bike, you know, whatever, even surfing, you know, you get the rubbing of the wetsuits. You need to put a barrier between your skin and whatever's rubbing you raw. And so we created TriSlide. It's unique in the way that it is a spray. All the other ones are sticks, or you stick your hand in a jar, and this one is a hygienic application. So, you know, not just you, but family members can use it. You know, friends can use it. You can pass it around and feel confident that you're not spreading germs. And our last brand that we have is called Foggle. Foggle is an anti-fog wipe, and what makes that unique is that the anti-fog solution is infused on a really nice soft towelette. So not only are you defogging your goggles, swim goggles, but you are cleaning the lens at the same time, which no other swim company has addressed. You know, they just say to put the drops on and wipe them off, and there's no cleaning formula in there. And so we thought that why not couple the two, Foggle and, or the anti-fog and the cleaning solution, and you have Foggle, which turns out to be a great little product as well, because not only are swimmers using it for their swim goggles, but cyclists and runners use it on their sunglasses, and snowboarders are using it, and we even have some hockey teams back in the East that are using it on their visors as well. So those are our three products that we have.
When you were on the program in June, you mentioned with Foggle, too, that firemen were interested in using it because of the, you know, the extreme conditions they're into, and they suffer from having, you know, their masks that many times fog up with them as well. And so I was curious as to, that started me thinking about, you know, this, I love to have entrepreneurs on the radio program who start companies, because in my opinion, it's the hardest thing to do in business is to create a company from nothing.
Right.
And I also love that, doubly love to have entrepreneurs like you on the show who create products that solve a need based on personal experience.
Right.
And then to watch how those products evolve beyond the original intent of the entrepreneur for their own personal experience by virtue of others seeing the product and getting exposure and saying, hey, I could use that. And, you know, how does that take the company?
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because we do, what sets us apart from a lot of other companies is that because we are all athletes and we actually use our products. So that's kind of what sets us apart from other companies that may just put a product out there, but maybe they may not necessarily use it. Like, for instance, right now I reek of chlorine. We just had some shampoo made, and in order for me to approve what we call a tank sample, you know, I have to make sure that it works and that it removes the chlorine. So I guarantee you that Paul Mitchell, who, you know, got to love their products, but I guarantee he doesn't hop in the pool when he has to test his chlorine out product. So I can't wait to get in the shower after we get off this this phone call. But, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, that's what we find is that when we do a lot of grassroots marketing, and we do find that athletes, they will come up to us, and they see that we're athletes, and they talk to us. So it's kind of nice because you can talk the talk and walk the walk with them, and you can discuss the, you know, unpleasantries of you know, such things like triathlon. I mean, triathlon's a great sport, but there are some uncomfortable parts of it. And you can offer a solution to them, too, you know, when they complain about the chafing or the blistering on their feet or, you know, just the dry, itchy skin that they get from the chlorine. And we got back. We were at a trade show in Philadelphia back, I think it was, like, in the springtime, and people, you know, people move indoors. In the East Coast, they move indoors to swim as soon as usually around November. And the chlorine counts are higher in the pools, and, you know, then they go into their offices and the heaters are on. So it's just all the makings of just a horribly dry, itchy skin. And people were coming up to us at the booth just going, do you have anything that can help us? And we'd look, and it just looked like their skin, it was just cracking, or it was had red, blotchy, you know, spots on it. And sure enough, we gave them the body wash, and it took care of it right away. So we do, you know, that's what we are. We are kind of proud of that. Not that, you know, it's a great product, but that we can help people as well.
It's an interesting phase in a company's life, this phase that your company is going through, especially because of the all that you just said about how you connect to the products and use them, because many times larger companies get their creativity and imagination stifled because they lose that spark that comes from being the entrepreneur that started it for a passionate reason. And it's really remarkable that clients and prospective clients can come to a booth and talk to you, and if you don't have the product, they could launch you on an odyssey to develop the product,
right,
and then have it the next time they see you, which is, how powerful is that in the marketplace? I think that is so cool.
Yeah, we've actually had people, you know, they've given us ideas. Oh, and it's funny, too, because once they find out I'm the owner, and I love to talk, I mean, as you know, I love it, and I love people. And so when I'm out there meeting all these athletes, I think because I'm approachable, people just start going off about, you know, and in a good way, because they want to see you succeed. And they, you know, they're giving you all these ideas, but at the same time, I'm thinking dollars. You know, I see, you know, they could say, well, what about if you did this or changed it up just a little bit or changed the name? Like, for instance, our Tri-Slide is, like I said, it is really one of the best skin lubricants out there because it stays on. You never have to reapply it. And the application is so great. Well, we're trying to get into the cycling community, but for some reason it's really, really difficult to get into certain markets, whether it's their mentality, they really are happy with what they have and they don't want to branch out and look at something new. I don't know, but one of the things that my Canadian distributor and I were talking about, because we just returned from a trade show in Deer Park in Utah, and one of the problems with Tri-Slide is that it has the word try in it, and roadies do not really like the word try in things. Not all of them, but some of them. And so we found that that's a block. But when we talk about changing the name of it, you know, you're talking like 15,000-20,000 cans. And if that doesn't fly, if that's not what's going to take to push it into the cycling community, then you're stuck with a name on a can that nobody really knows anything about, you know. So when people do have it, what I'm trying to say is that when people do have ideas, they're great ideas, but it is hard as a small business to think of the dollars because you have minimums that you have to, you know, purchase. It's not just like one or two cans, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to test market something like that too and scale it. And that is the other side of success, is that the business, as it scales, some of the freedoms of decision that you had back when you were smaller and didn't have to make such a large business decision were easier to make, weren't
right.
they?
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then as you get scale, you go, wow, now I, and then in that challenge, I think is a part of the reason why larger companies lose some of their spark, because they may see the opportunity, but for them to realize how to take advantage of it, there really has to be a return on their investment.
Right.
And by virtue of their size, their investment just becomes higher than entrepreneurs' investment, which is why many times entrepreneurs solve problems big companies don't.
Right. It's true. And it's funny. It's so funny that you said that, because in the last month, I've been dealing with two major companies, one swim company and one diving company, that they were both interested in the Tri-Slide and private labeling it. And so we were going back and forth and back and forth. And when it came down to the bottom dollar, you know, you think that these big, huge companies, you think they have all the money in the world, and what's a few cents, you know, that I'm proposing that this product is going to cost this much for them per unit, and they need it to be at maybe a 75% margin for them. So, you know, and I'm thinking, well, we're only off by like 2 cents. What is it to them? But they look, bottom line is the big companies, they do look at the bottom dollar, whereas I think the smaller entrepreneurial companies, I think they look at more like, this is fun, this is a project, and I want to see it succeed. I think the bigger companies have too many people to answer to.
There's something to be said for talking to the decision maker.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're dealing with small and mid-market companies, you're dealing with the founder and the entrepreneur and the CEO who make the decisions, it's kind of cool because if they say yes, it usually happens inside that company.
Right, right, yeah.
It's hard to find that in large companies when you're dealing with product managers and people who have the responsibility but not always the authority.
Right.
And then you have to wait for the people who have the authority mm-hmm. who aren't going to let you get at them anyway because for whatever reason they're off doing something else.
Right.
And I can see that. But then they have the appeal of channels and they have volume and they have all these other things that
it's really the scale.
And
you know what's really funny too is that I found through this, you know, because we do sell to retail stores. And with the small mom pop stores that we deal with, you know, basically they'll bring in a product and that's fine. They'll just scooch stuff aside and push your product in. Well, when you're dealing with big box stores, they want to know the exact size of everything because they have to know, basically it's called real estate on the shelf, and they need to know how many inches or centimeters wide and deep it's going to be on their shelf, and do they have that? I mean, everything is a formula in a big company. They even want to know that the information on, you know, your master cartons to be put into the distribution centers if they're going to have room or not. So it is really interesting when you start going with bigger companies.
So let's come back to a point that I made earlier in the interview with you, which is that we were lucky enough to sandwich this interview in your busy business schedule before you leave for a trip. Mm-hmm. Are you comfortable sharing a little bit about sort of where you're going and what you're doing?
Oh, sure, yeah. So we're leaving tomorrow for the Chicago Triathlon, and the Chicago Triathlon, it's sponsored by Lifetime Fitness, and it is probably, as far as I know, the biggest triathlon in the country right now. They're expecting 10,000 athletes, and usually a big triathlon, which would be considered an Ironman, is about 2,200 athletes. So this is quite large. It's going to be held in downtown Chicago, and we're headed off to exhibit and meet some of the athletes in the Midwest, which I'm really excited about. And they're expecting about 18,000 people to walk through the expo. So it's going to be really fun because we do market heavily to triathletes, and we are in magazines all the time, the Triathlete Magazine, Lava Magazine, and they're always doing product reviews on us, which is, you know, really, I'm so fortunate that I do work with these magazines. And, you know, they continually put us in front of the athlete. And so, you know, earlier we were talking about social media a while back, and I've been Facebooking today, you know, letting all of our athletes know that we are going to be in Chicago and that we have these special bags, these drawstring bags that we just had created that have one of our taglines that says keeping you comfortable, keeping you competitive, and it has our three logos on there. And so even if they buy a tube of, say, conditioner or body wash or a can of Tri-Slide, we're going to give them a free bag. So it's nice for us. It hardly costs us anything to have these bags, but people really like them, especially athletes. They can put their shoes in them, and they'll be walking around the expo with these bags and triathletes love logos. So you'll see them. They'll be all logoed out, but they'll have these bags on their back, and so they'll be walking around the expo, and people will see it, and they'll say, hey, where'd you get that bag from? And, yeah, so I think it's going to be a really, really good show for us.
You know, my public relations firm, the president of my public relations firm, marvels at what people will do for a free hat or T-shirt.
Yeah.
And so something of value like you're giving them, mm-hmm. I imagine even more so that – you know, there's a certain positive energy that they exhibit to get what they, you know, they're almost like kid-like sometimes
right.
to get things like that.
And it is funny because you kind of have to look at, okay, I could have pens done, but everybody has pens done. You know, you have to kind of think of what is the right price for your company that won't throw you over, you know, and how much value can you get from that? So that's, you know, kind of what we looked at with this. My friend, he owns a triathlon store, and we were arguing one day about, you know, in a friendly way, I have head sweats visors, and head sweats are like the premier visors that people wear. They're so comfortable, and they've got elastic in the back, and they wick away the moisture, and we have our logos embroidered on it. And he said, how much did you pay for each hat? And I said, $8. And I give them to my athletes. You know, we have a bunch of sponsored athletes. And he said, well, I got these for $1.35. And I said, yeah, but does anybody wear them? That's the thing, is that if no one's going to wear them, then it does no good for you. So, you know, that's where we were going back and forth, that you have to, a company has to look at, yeah, I'm going to be spending this money and this person's going to take this for free, but is it something that they're going to keep on seeing the logo because they're going to be using it?
How did you, you said before, I believe, keeping you comfortable, keeping you competitive. I'm paraphrasing that now.
No, maybe. You did. Mm-hmm.
Okay. How did you come up with that?
Okay, I cannot tell a lie. It's my husband. My husband is amazing at taglines. He should have gone into advertising. He comes up with the most amazing taglines. So he just thinks them up. I tell him, Philip, I need you know, an idea on this, and he comes up with it. He drives to L.A. every day, so he has a lot of time in the car. So,
I love that. I mean, I think that is very memorable, and
yeah.
I didn't want to blow past that. I thought that.
Yeah.
Well, give Philip a congratulations from Critical Mass, the radio show.
I will.
We're going to take a very short break,
sure.
and then we're going to come up, and a couple of things we're going to ask Karen with the time that we have left. But first, here's a word from a sponsor.
If you are a Southern California business owner or executive, this message is for you. For over 17 years, Doug Gaffella has been coaching executives, helping them create and improve the effectiveness of teams and individual team members. What makes Doug's approach unique and successful is his fundamental approach. Doug looks at the coaching from the perspective of the client, not the coach. Doug has helped hundreds of companies and led over 1,000 planning meetings that have changed lives and the course of many successful firms throughout Southern California. If you're interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn about our executive coaching and team development. Critical Mass for Business is a professional executive coaching and team development company and is the fastest growing business advisory firm in Orange County.
Welcome back to Critical Mass, the radio show. Karen Allard is our guest. And final question for you today here on Critical Mass, the radio program. What do you see or expect for the rest of 2011 for your business, kind of given what's going on in the economic environment and what you've been seeing from, you know, your own product's growth?
Right. Well, we could expect to keep growing. We've been in business for 7 years now, and we've grown our root system, and I know I've talked about this before in the previous show, but it is so important to build a good base for your company, whether it be, you know, if you're a service-related company or a product, you know, you manufacture like what we do, build your base first, you know, build that root system, because if you go after the big companies at first and you don't have a good base system, and that big company drops you, you don't have a company anymore. So it's better to just build the little, you know, the small mom-pop stores if you can do that. And so I think we've done that, and we've done that very well in, you know, the past 7 years. And now this year we are working on what our plans are going to be for the rest of 2011 and 2012. In fact, I just talked to – we have a rep firm that handles the beauty side of TriSwim because I just don't know the beauty industry, so they kind of take care of that for me. And we just had a meeting that we are going to start branching out into more beauty distributors. And but we need to get in front of them right now because they're already planning for their spring of 2012. So, as far as growth, we were growing at quite a rapid speed. And then I would say probably that just this last year, our growth was really stagnant. It kind of stopped. It didn't drop, but it just stayed the same as what it was in the previous year. This August is the first August that we've actually doubled our sales from last August. So, you know, we're kind of pleased about that. And with our marketing, it usually takes, because we're a seasonal product, it usually takes a year. So we market to the athletes, you know, during the last summer, and then they're remembering it and they're purchasing for this summer. So I expect that we're going to continue to grow. I don't think, you know, with the economic turmoil that's been going on, it hasn't really affected us too much, which we're lucky. But then again, it's hard to say, because would we have grown more if we didn't have that economic turmoil. So, you know, it's hard to say. I'm just really grateful that we're still in business. And, you know, they say if you make it after 3 years, then you're going to stay in the business. And so I'm just really grateful that we're still here and that we continue to grow and add new products and, you know, get more people hooked on everything we do.
And so tell us your website again, please, Karen.
Our website is S as in swim, B as in bike, R as in run, sports, sportsinc.com. So sbrsportsinc.com.
So you're going back to Chicago. You're going to attend the trade show. You're going to get a lot of positive buzz. You're going to have your bags out there. People will be walking around with them. Now, the day of the race, are you competing as well?
Oh, my gosh, no. No. You know what? We decided to bring, we have four kids and we're bringing two of our girls, and so I just couldn't do that to them. So we're going to play, I think, on Sunday and then come home on Monday.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I wish you the best of luck on this trip. I'm sure it's going to be very successful for the brand and for everything that you're doing.
Thank you.
Have a safe trip.
Thanks, Rick.
Well, I hope that from both of our guests today, you picked up nuggets of ideas that you can use either for inspiration or for application inside of your business. You know, we try every week here and every show on Critical Mass, the radio show, to provide you with insight, advice, and guidance from your peers who can help you to make better business decisions. And so until the next time we talk, this is Rick Franzi, host of Critical Mass, the radio show, wishing that all your business decisions moves your company in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, the radio show, only on octalkradio.net.